Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The jokes have been flying around this week. Can Missouri lose? What kind of an underdog is Missouri today?
They're not the underdog, Danny. They've been the favorites the last two games.
It's snarky.
If you're going to take those shots like you're some...
I'm not taking shots. I'm just saying what people have tried to be funny about Missouri today because they are not playing.
I really thought there was a chance they could be undefeated. I wouldn't have bought into that very strongly. But one loss maybe somewhere in there. They might have lost one. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're... A one-loss team getting ready to go to Georgia with a week off and ranked 18th in the country. I really thought that. But one of the questions we asked, Danny, about Missouri was replacing Drew Locke. That was not as easy as it seems. And we gave Kelly Bryant the benefit of the doubt, saying he's won at Clemson. Grad transfers have worked in college football. Look at Oklahoma. They win Heismans, so we didn't have to be down about that, not integrating with your team. But Kelly Bryant has looked more ordinary in the middle of the season here, Danny, in these two just punch-in-the-gut losses. And last week, wow, we thought the Vanderbilt game was going to be an easy win. I said I would bet that Missouri's going to win by more than a 20-plus points they were favored by, and they did not. They were not the better team, deserved to lose, and did. And then they went to Kentucky. Kentucky has no passing threat at all, and the Tigers were dominated all day long. So do you look at them as a 5-3 team? Not that far out in the SEC East, or you start panicking, and you've got to bring in all the Gary Pinkel comparisons because it took Gary Pinkel a while, including a year where Missouri fans say, I think this is it, before it all popped and things went well. So is Barry Odom following the Gary Pinkel blueprint and things are going to be just fine, or is last year's season a little bit of an aberration, and this year, man, that game against Tennessee, I hate to advance myself, Danny, but in a few weeks – Tennessee at home. Tennessee's a team that's not great. Missouri should win. But if they were to happen to lose that game at home, wow, they still could get to 6-6 with the easy schedule they had, beat Arkansas, which you would expect them to do if they lose their next two games. But still, it is so hard. This is one of the hardest teams to evaluate because they're 5-3 and winning college football games are hard. But yet the last 2 weeks have put a big cloud around Missouri.
Very fine column by Vahe Gregorian today talking about just what Stan said, that really Barry Odom and Gary Pinkel are in very, very similar spots. And actually, overall, Barry Odom has a slightly better record than Gary Pinkel did at this point in time.
But it's only 24-22 for Odom.
Yeah, but also I think Gary Pinkel probably took over a slightly worse situation. He could make an argument also that the dynamics of the campus were difficult for Barry Odom.
Odom still had a better situation.
Yeah,
taking Pinkel's players and the belief and tradition that Missouri had. Pinkel, when he came in, they had only two winning seasons since 83 or 84 when he took over. It was a hard program to build. I know Barry Odom says it was really, really tough, and what was going on around campus put a lot of questions in the football program, but it was nowhere near as hard as what Gary Pinkel had to do to revive Mizzou football.
Well, and also I think we see what modern football is like when we look at the stats for Kelly Bryant. He's completing 62% of his passes. He's thrown 14 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions. That's certainly not bad. Nothing great. I mean, he's averaging, 225, 230 yards of passing per game. But maybe the thing that is the most surprising and the thing that Missouri fans are thinking about the most is that he's only run for 205 yards, and his rush average is 2.5. Now, that includes sacks, so we have to put that into the equation. But still, even if you took the sacks out, it can't be even 4 yards a carry.
You don't want to say that you see anything positive about talking about sacks either. You know,
right.
That means you got caught in the backfield.
Right.
I know it's not a running play, but good runners need to get away. And some of the quarterback rushing yards are more per attempt, Danny, because they scramble well. Just see Jalen Hurts. They don't call running plays at Oklahoma for Jalen Hurts that often. They let him scramble, and he goes out. So it is a tough situation to be Kelly Bryant right now. And I think we've developed that pretty well over the last number of weeks, saying it's different when you got the focus on you, and you're expected to go out and win the game and be flawless, and the guys around you need you to win as opposed to support you, and you're just one of the guys driving the car. And how does he handle that pressure? And it's new to Missouri. It's a show-me state, Danny. He probably didn't realize what show-me meant until they lost a couple of games. And now people – you don't see many comments that are that positive from the Missouri fans. Like, hey, watch out for our quarterback. He won at Clemson. We're going to be just fine. It's always good to go back to what you thought in August. It's always good to take that look. And one of the things that we spoke about was replacing Drew Locke, a multi-year starter, a guy who's grown up and went through adversity and now fought to a positive level, and, oh, by the way, is a high-level NFL draft pick. You might forget that because Drew Locke got hurt in the preseason. We haven't seen him with the Denver Broncos yet because of that unfortunate injury, but Drew Locke's a big-time quarterback. So Kelly Bryant needed to play at a very high level to be in the range with him. And then Garrett getting injured at the linebacker position, how much of a heart and soul issue was that, Danny? He
right.
made big plays. We know that. I talk about having guys like him not only making big plays, but getting everybody lined up correctly. Because you mentioned college football today. One thing that's different about college football today than a long time ago, like the pros, they're trying to match up things, and the offensive coordinators are giving you a ton of different looks, trying to bait you into problems, get you to line up in the wrong spot. And it used to be when you lined up in the wrong spot in the old days, which is hard to do because they had I formation, one tight end, two wide receivers. You know, you line up in the same spot hundreds of times, week after week after week in a row. But now, instead of it being a 7-yard run, you know, the old days, like, oh, darn, we really blew it. That guy ran for 7 yards. Come on, guys, let's get going. Now they house it if they can get you in a bad situation. So modern football, maybe there's more to just Garrett not being out there. Then to me, it's one really good player, but Missouri didn't seem to play with heart. Are we going to say that they're not a good road team? Is that going to be our differential, that the Tigers have been fine at home and unacceptable on the road, not having won any road games yet? Will that play out? Does the Arkansas game come into play? It's a road game. You'd think
right.
Missouri should win. But
and they likely will go into that game having not won a road game.
Probably not, because Georgia's the only one left.
Right. Right. So
next week.
And I guess that's the part. Okay, the Missouri offense has been scattershot, sometimes good, sometimes not. But the real story in the last two games has been the fact that they have allowed inferior offenses to control the flow of the game. Now, they hardly got lit up for 45 points or something, but to allow Vanderbilt and Kentucky to dictate what the game was like with their offense is unacceptable.
Right. Let's look at a great comparison. Mississippi. When Mississippi came in to play, we talked about how they are one-dimensional, but they're really good at running the football. And would they be able to control the game, or would they get behind and be forced into obvious passing situations, which wouldn't be good for Mississippi, or continuing to run and probably not able to come back? Well, Mississippi put some big yards up against Mizzou, but they did it without control of the game. It's a big word that you just said. Controlling the game is important, and that's what Missouri lost out against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt never had a big lead in a game. They only went by 7. But they had complete control of the game. Missouri scored because the starting quarterback who came back in as the backup threw an interception, and Mizzou tied it up. Guess what Vanderbilt did? Just stayed in control of the game, got their 7-point lead again, and acted like it was a 20-point lead.
And ran out the clock for the last 6 minutes.
And then Kentucky looked like the best of what Mississippi could have brought. Mississippi was a dangerous opponent to Missouri just because they were so good at running the football, so dedicated to it, and had long strike ability. Mississippi fought hard at the end, but it was way too little too late. Missouri controlled that game. And now we've seen two games in a row where there's got to be tons of questions. Where does the defense stand? How can they have confidence going to Georgia saying, we're going to shut them down? I mean, the opponent has dictated to Missouri if we want to run and you know we can only run, there's nothing Missouri can do about it. And Georgia, oh, by the way, will be able to throw the ball with some efficiency. And in Florida, probably not a great throwing team. Missouri's matched up well with them. We'll see how cold it is. Colder the better against Florida. It wouldn't surprise me, Danny, if we're sitting here with a week off talking about Mizzou being only 5-3, if they accidentally, you know, beat Georgia or Florida. That's been Barry Odom football. I don't have a good read about how good this coach is, where this program is. I am not sure. There was a transition. Drew Locke was there. He went through heck and stayed alive, and I know he's a good quarterback, and Missouri could be an 8-win team. But do I believe, oh, Missouri's going to go to that bowl game and take care of business? Do I believe any game Missouri is going to be reliable? No, but I also don't put past them that they have the capabilities and the athletes to go win a game against almost anybody, and that's where we are. They have to pull one of those surprises out. If Barry Odom doesn't pull a surprise out, we'll be sitting here, what, with 4 straight losses?
Yes.
With a week in between and then a week before they play against Tennessee at home, I believe that's like 6 weeks without winning a football game. And when you're around a campus and the leaves turn as beautifully as they do in Missouri, and you go from green grass to leaves being beautiful to almost time for snow, and you haven't won a game in football, that's like 5 years worth. 6 weeks is forever.
No question about that, and we'll see how it plays out. My feeling about Barry Odom is still that if he can survive. I think he can survive as the Missouri head coach. I don't think he can thrive. That would be and he's got to prove, he can prove me wrong, and he seemed like maybe he was on the verge of doing so, but the schedule. But this is a setback season, and we'll talk about the Big 12 here in a moment because it's a limited schedule. Because everything laid out for him perfectly, except, as you said, the incumbent quarterback. But that seemed to be in good hands, too. It seemed to be. And now with all this positivity, you go out and you go 7-5, that bowl game is going to be real important. And the 7-5 is still in peril. Because
end up 6-6.
Yeah, and he could literally be coaching for his job in Arkansas.
Yeah, and I'm going to advance it 1 week earlier against Tennessee because that's at least at home. And
right, that's
and you,
true.
And, boy, you got to win that game because Tennessee, we know Tennessee has athletes, tradition. It's a sleeping little team that could bounce back. We'll talk about, for instance, we talked about Baylor a little bit. Baylor, when it came to the Big 12, were on a slump, and everyone said they were awful. No, go look at their football history. What they're doing now is more like what Baylor's been very good.
Yeah, they've been a solid football program.
They were going to be able to bounce back.
They were just terrible at the outset of the Big 12.
Bad,
so that's
bad
all
timing
everybody,
for them, man.
That's all anybody.
And they
ever
had the wrong
about.
Coaches. We know how much that makes a difference. And you go to the Big 12; it was hard. It's hard duty to go there. Tennessee, Danny, they could wake up if they get the right coach. They've got things in order to easily be an eight-win team, 9-win team. Snap of the fingers, that makes them dangerous. They come in with athletes. So that game, that means a lot. But I want to ask you this. You said your statement about Barry Odom. I just want to say, what were you saying in the fourth year about Gary Pinkel? Just for instance, do you remember what you were saying about Gary Pinkel
from
Toledo?
I can't say that I absolutely did, but I think that maybe it's just an absolute perception thing. Gary Pinkel looked like a program leader to me. Now, maybe I wasn't convinced that he could absolutely do it.
And he had done it at Toledo. Odom had not been a head coach.
Right, and Barry Odom has not been a head coach. So there are some different things. Also, Barry Odom basically got hired on the heels of Kim Anderson's tenure, hiring a
Mizzou guy.
Hiring a Mizzou guy. So, he probably get painted with that brush a little bit, too. So we'll see. One final note on Missouri. Good timing, bad timing, is there any way to quantify that they have a bye today?
What I'm worried about is that 6 weeks.
Right.
So I think it's bad timing on that front. But if you want to pull the upset off, and if we're sitting here talking about the win over Georgia, it would be helpful to bunker down. I'm telling you, Missouri people are trying to avoid the subject of Missouri football today. I mean, it kind of lets a breath of fresh air around the program when no one says all the expectations, everything. They've written it off. They say Missouri stinks this year. We probably don't get to go to a bowl game because that NCAA stupidly, if we get an announcement we're going or not. I mean, because everyone has just shut it down, just kind of said, it's been a disappointment. I think almost every Missouri fan just says, no matter what you tell me about the rest of the year, it's a disappointment. That would change if they beat Georgia or Florida.
Right.
But right now, they don't think about that. They're going, right. No, we aren't going to beat them. So the week off helps Missouri football because they're going to work and grind and not quit. And Barry Odom's good at bouncing back. So there's a chance it's good. But more than likely, I'm saying, if you lose to Georgia and you lose to Florida, when you get ready for that Tennessee game, wow, your kids have not won in forever. And that scares me always.
There's only three games total this week in the Big 12, as four teams have a bye. One of those games was played on Thursday, and it was a survive-and-advance effort by Baylor. They weren't very good. They had kind of a national spotlight on them, but they won the game. And the difference between winning and losing is gigantic. No style points for the Bears, but I'm sure right now, now that the game's passed, they don't care.
Well, they can't care because who would have expected that they would be at this position right now? In Danny, last weekend, when the games unfolded last week, was the definition of what I keep saying. The Big 12 looks to me like the NFL, where it's very competitive. In all the games, the team that won had to surprise you. TCU beat Texas. Okay? TCU was not in a good position. They lost a game against K-State. Things aren't going well. They're completely disappointed. Texas is mad that they didn't play well against KU, and their fans are all over them. And TCU went out and won the game. How about Iowa State, man? They bounce back. They're going to be fine. Oklahoma State goes in there and takes care of business, and we know about K-State. So this has turned into super competitiveness. If Oklahoma at all can be drawn into the pack, wow. But Texas definitely is in the pack, and I think Kansas deserves to be pulled in. I got nine teams that are like NFL teams. Sure, some are going to win more than others. So to survive in advance under that scenario, big-time deal for Baylor, and they're starting to put together some math that makes it hard to believe that they're not going to be in the Big 12 championship game. And who wouldn't say that is a great accomplishment for this team? So winning even against West Virginia at home in what would be a lackluster Thursday night football game, I think it's good. Baylor's still undefeated. Matt Rhule's doing a very good job. And I love the quarterback Brewer. So Baylor's not a dominant team. They could still lose, but it's pretty significant that they're 8-0 in what has become an outrageously competitive conference. And today there's only one other Big 12 game going on, and guess what? It's the same thing. TCU at Oklahoma State. Who's going to win?
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a heck of a matchup. TCU's great at defense, stopping the run. They're great. And Chuba Hubbard's a giant, big-time runner. So could it possibly be a little bit of a lower-scoring game? Oklahoma State doesn't like playing any of those games. I mean, 30 seems like a low-scoring game to Mike Gundy. Only 30? Why don't we play in the 40s? And TCU wants to play a 21-17 game. A lot at stake right here. TCU's 2-2 in the conference. Oklahoma State's 2-3. They both have three losses overall. It's a big deal because the loser is not where they want to be. Neither one of these programs want to be sitting with four losses at this point in the season, and yet they're going to play today. A lot at stake. This is just the parody, man. Pete Rozelle, where are you? Are you the Big 12 commissioner? Pete Rozelle used to be the NFL commissioner who said he loved parody. People don't even know who Pete Rozelle is.
That's right.
He's the guy who made the NFL. He and Lamar Hunt came together, and Pete Rozelle's the guy who said, what, Danny? TV is where the NFL on a national basis is going to make it. He got the New York Giants, the big city guys, to agree to share all the revenue, even with the little guys. It was a brilliant decision, and he was right. But how about another decision I want to know about, Danny? We don't have much time probably in this segment. How about we talk about Missouri? How about Nebraska?
There
Scott Frost. There's no here's a guy coming back home, like Barry Odom, but there was no doubt about him. We got the guy. Nebraska football's fine. I got so excited 2 weeks ago that I thought Nebraska was ready to play Indiana and was talking about it, and then I caught myself. And you weren't sitting next to me, so you couldn't make funny faces at me. I actually did catch myself rather than you saying, Stan, they're not playing this week. It's a week off. It's next week. Well, that game was big, and Indiana won. Nebraska lost to Indiana.
You just can't. You can't do it.
At home.
You can't do it.
And so 2 years of not making a bowl game, Scott Frost having a disappointing season, but bounced back like Barry Odom. Remember the end of the season? Nebraska football was back. We're going to be fine. You get in this year, that crushing loss to Colorado. Then you lose to Illinois. You barely beat Northwestern. Minnesota whips you. You lose to Indiana at home. Today's game's big, Danny, at Purdue. It is a giant game because after this, it's Wisconsin at Maryland and Iowa. Nebraska can still get bowl eligible, but what do they think about Scott Frost? I don't know where the enthusiasm level is, but I tell you what, if they lose to Purdue today, you lose to Indiana and Purdue in back-to-back weeks,
that's a disaster.
It's hard for Nebraska fans to...
They don't play football in Indiana. I mean, they just...
They're hooping it up right now in Indiana now.
They try. They give it a go.
I'm just saying, this is a giant game.
Absolutely.
Somewhat locally here, a giant game today at Purdue.
Certainly not at the highest level, and the highest level is what we'll be talking about next with the executive director of the College Football Playoff, Bill Hancock, as their first poll will come out next week after week 10, and we'll see where things shake out. A few teams at the very top that are dominating, but 12 teams are affected by that particular poll when the season comes to an end. Bill Hancock next on College Football Game Day. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a yearly treat to get to talk with Bill Hancock, the executive director of the College Football Playoff. Bill, always a pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I always enjoy these, and it's good to talk a little college football with two good guys.
Well, it's great to talk to you, and you're such a great representative of our region, Kansas City. You're here, but you're also in Dallas a lot with this job, and boy, this job is heating up. Bill, the rankings come out soon, I think next week for the College Football Playoff. You start your rankings, and you guys have done a nice job, I believe, in being patient and letting a lot of the season play out before you jump in. But this year's really intriguing to me for a reason that it doesn't normally occur. I got a coaches poll that I look at, and I got an AP poll that I look at, and they're different number one teams. So I'm waiting for the tiebreaker from you guys.
Well, we do wait this late for a reason. The early polls, the preseason polls, are fun for the fans, but they're meaningless. And this year we wait till after this weekend, after week 10. And that gives us plenty of games to analyze. The top four, the top 25, certainly would have been different if we had done this September 17. But to do it November 5 makes a lot of sense.
And, of course, we get two Southeast Conference teams are the two different number ones right now in those particular polls. Just what go through the decision-making of where you came to use Week 10?
You know, it was let's just let enough of the season go by so that we can get a real thorough evaluation. We didn't want to wait too late because we didn't want to just drop rankings out of the sky onto fans. And we didn't want to go too early because we wanted to see enough games played. And I think we hit the sweet spot.
So you feel pretty good about this because it's an interesting thing that each week in football is such a big percentage of new information compared to the whole pot that minds can be changed tremendously. But I think fans are used to how rankings have been done traditionally for 75 years or whatever it's been, that if a team's number one and you guys show a College Football Playoff poll next week, then the next week after that, if everybody up there at top wins, it would be exactly the same. What's the feedback been like? I know it's a little bit of a curveball to fans' mentality when you change someone's ranking and they haven't lost a game. So what about that mentality? What's the feedback? And mostly from your constituents. You know, we can talk about the fans all we want, but you got all the conferences involved right there that really are the ones who get to decide, does this make sense?
Yeah, that's really a fascinating question. Our feeling is that we start with a clean sheet of paper every week. A clean slate every week, and when we just re-examine every team's full resume based on the games to date. This is not your daddy's AP poll, where if you win, you go up, and if you lose, you go down. The beauty of it is the committee is able to sit back and say, okay, now we have 10 weeks, and then next week it'll be now we have 11 weeks. And how do they look different? I like that fresh approach. I like that fresh start. There are times after the rankings when I look back and say, "Well, how did we compare with the poll, or how did we compare with us last week?" But in the committee room, it's they start all over every week.
You you now are several years into this, and obviously the people do shortish terms as far as members of the college playoff committee. How have you noticed, seeing the dynamics change as the roster of people changes slightly each and every year?
They do serve shortish terms, 3 years. If you're the chair in your third year, you can be reelected to serve a fourth year, but the majority of the people serve three. How about this? We've had 30 members of the committee so far in these first 6 years, and the chemistry does change. The bank board in Holton, Kansas, changes. The chemistry changes when a new member comes on and someone drops off. That's human nature. That's the way it goes. But for us, we have a defined, disciplined set of protocol that the committee must adhere to and does adhere to. So they follow the same procedures this year as last year's committee, even though this year we have four new members and that chemistry is a little different. We have also five classifications of members, former players, former coaches, former journalists, current university or former university administrators, either one, and then sitting athletic directors. That gives the committee a great diverse perspective. And we also have geographic balance on the committee. And all that goes together to give us a great perspective and a great balance. But your intuition is right, Danny, but the chemistry does change every year.
What about those dynamics? It's great to get the insight because it's not the same every year. And you talked about hitting your sweet spot, about when you put out the first poll. And you taught us a lot, like you always do, with how this works. But how much of it becomes a mathematical equation? I mean, when we're talking about the NCAA tournament, it's studied greatly. And I can tell you, I know a lot of people that are involved monitoring everything. And it just, everyone wants to turn it into understandable math. And we're into statistics more than ever before. Even teams are using it, going for fourth down more because they're looking at the odds. We see people tell us the odds. ESPN's throwing out percentage of chances of making the college football playoff if you win or lose and all those kind of things. But when you're in the committee room and you got that blank sheet of paper and you got the dynamics, how much do you want it to be influenced by those football people who say, I don't know about all those numbers, but I can tell you that right tackle would blow anybody off the ball and they could win the game, versus the people who go more toward the math? We outside, I think, want to turn it into a mathematical equation and try to make it more predictable. What is the sweet spot, or how does it work inside it? What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think like you, Stan, I think from back, like when you compared to when you played, the numbers have taken a way more significant part of things in all of sports. I believe I saw a deal that the Astros had an 80% chance to win that game 7 last week. Going into the seventh
killing
inning.
Me. You're killing me.
Uh-oh, Danny's, killing me, Bill. Danny's an Astros fan.
Danny, take
your headphones off for a second.
It's all right.
Very relevant point, because you're going to say the Astros might not have won that game. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah, we're talking
they
football
might,
now.
Who did win that game? I don't know.
I'll ask Danny.
Well, Danny, you know, it's been 3 days, so hopefully by now you're over it,
yeah,
right?
I was pretty much over it when it was done. That's all right.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go.
It was those orange jerseys. I'm into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You can't win game 7 with a spring training jersey on, Danny. Except they should have worn the white tops.
Except they did when they won the world championship the last time.
Oh, okay. They're good luck jerseys.
I guess, yeah.
I'm just not enough into the Astros. But
anyway.
But we got Bill Hancock, executive director of the College Football
talking
Playoff.
Numbers. And, anyway, talking numbers.
Yeah, it's hard to predict even when the prediction appears so relevant.
Well, yeah, and the thing that I started to answer before I dragged Danny through the mud there. I'm sorry, Danny.
It's all right.
But the fact is that we had a basically numbers-based system in the BCS, and folks didn't like it, including my bosses. My bosses are the conference commissioners, all 10 of them, and they said when we started the playoff, okay, numbers are fine, but let's get a committee of experts. High-integrity football experts in the room, and yeah, they can look at the numbers, but at the end of the day, it's the 13 subjective opinions of the 13 members that combine to do the rankings. So numbers are a factor, there's no doubt. But also a factor is football people sitting back and looking at each team's game-by-game results and comparing those with the other team's results that are in the picture.
When the season began, I think there was a narrative out there that Clemson and Alabama had become so dominant as far as college football is concerned that it was taking away from the product. Now, LSU has risen up and probably at least a little bit saved the day, but we did seem to be getting into a place where, you know, two or three powerhouse programs dominate the landscape, and that really can't be good for college football, can it?
Let me answer it this way. College football has always gone in cycles. And we are in a cycle now, there's no doubt, where Clemson and Alabama have been strong, and Oklahoma. Obviously, if you look at the number of appearances in the first five CFPs, but the cycle will continue. There's no reason to think it won't. And I told somebody last week, if we had looked at this in the mid to late 50s, people would have been sick of Oklahoma.
Right.
And if you looked at it, you know, in the 2000s, people would have been sick of Southern Cal and Florida State, and it goes on and on and on. And those are the way the cycles match up. And whether any cycle can be said to be good or bad for the game, I think there's two sides to that question. The fact is the cycles are real, and our committee just deals with the cycle as it presents itself just only this season.
Bill Hancock's committee is going to give a college football playoff poll this week, and the one that matters at the end will have four teams that be a part of the college football playoff, and we can always split the hairs about that if we wanted to and say, is that right or wrong? And the whole nation is doing that, and they're very aware of those four teams and what happens, Bill. But my question is really the next layer and your thoughts about where we are in history with the New Year's Six. You basically have 12 teams playing in six major bowls that you also are responsible for with certain restrictions of conference contracts and those kind of things. But in general, you are there to make these matchups, not just for the top four teams, but for more than that. How does everyone feel about that? Your conference commissioners, are they, you know, if you didn't make the playoff, you could be disappointed. But I still think those are super exciting football games. And they in also will have a team that's out of the Power Five by definition as part of that 12. So there's an entry there. But just your thoughts on how that is playing out, what it means to college football, and the feedback you're getting from the conferences and the participants of how it's working.
Yeah, working very well. We built the system on top of the system that was existing and on top of the tradition of the Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Orange Bowl, and as you noted, and the other bowls. And as you noted, those three, Rose, Sugar, and Orange, are contracted through their conferences. So our committee doesn't have anything to do with those pairings except for that the teams that are in those games are selected by the bowl, based in large part on the CFP rankings. The bowl games continue to be very successful. Attendance at some of the games is ticking downward just a little bit. Television viewership at the same time is holding up very well. And most importantly, in my mind, we're providing an experience at the end of the season that is unlike any other, where teams go to a different part of the country, and those young people are the toast of the town for 4 or 5 days. I remember when K-State, and Stan, you were there, I know, when K-State played in the Pinstripe Bowl for the first time. And it might have been Coach Snyder, I don't remember who told me, but said whatever percentage of our players, whatever they were, 70%, let's say, had never been to New York City before. And they were just enthralled by what they got to do in New York City during that period. And I got thinking, how many of those players may not ever go back to New York City? I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that the bowl game provided a memorable, a lifetime experience for all those young people. And that happens time after time after time in the bowls every year. And I love that. I love it.
You know what? You are such a good guy and always on the conservative side, not to overstate, I'm going to go 90%+ of those players hadn't been in New York City. So it was I was there. It was giant numbers. And even for me and my wife got a chance to go, it was awesome. And these bowl games are awesome. So I'm just going to, you know, ring that bell for those that say, I don't care about the bowl games. Just turn on the TV and let them play. The experience those kids have before that game starts is incredible, awesome, unique, and different than any other college experience you have. And, oh, by the way, the games aren't bad either.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, this is sort of related to that. Once you do something once and it works and, you know, some of the challenges that seems to be there don't seem so great, is the model there one that has been given any thought, do you think, for like a Fenway Park bowl game, a Wrigley Field bowl game? You know, it seems like, you know, we've seen that with concerts. I mean, the baseball parks now are used and things like that. Have you heard any noise about something like that with the success of the Pinstripe Bowl in areas where college football really doesn't often resonate?
Yeah, how about this? There hasn't been a lot of publicity about it, but the fact is there will be a bowl game in Fenway next year.
Oh.
The Fenway Bowl.
Well, there you go. And I didn't even know.
The Danny Klinkskill Fenway Bowl.
Yeah, like I said, not a lot of publicity. But I think it's really cool. I don't know about Chicago. Haven't heard much. Somebody mentioned that to me one time, but haven't seen that go any further down the road. But yeah, it's going to happen in Fenway next year. Next year, we're adding, college football is adding, three new bowl games. One in Fenway, one in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina,
Wow. And
one in the new Rams Stadium out in L.A.
Oh, that'll be fancy.
I'm enthralled with the Fenway Bowl, and I wish I were free at that time of year. If I were, I'd try to go to it.
One little clarification before we let you go, Bill. You mentioned about how awesome of an experience it is to utilize the bowls. I guess I have to ask you, the Alabama and Clemson players, for instance, because Danny talked about they're there for the college football playoff. It's very serious business. I think you've done a nice job of making it a bowl week for their first game and in a little bit of a Super Bowl feel for the second one, so it's unique and really an awesome experience. But I just want to go back to the bowl experience. Do you think that they are enjoying it like other 20-year-olds are, or is it is the college football playoff component getting the coaches to say, well, I don't want them to go out and see sights, and I don't want them to go to the hospital. I want them to rest because this is for the national championship. Is it a bowl experience for the kids, or is the pressure of the championship affect that?
It's a hybrid. It is different than the other games. The semifinals are. They're there to win. They're there to try to win the national championship. But most coaches realize that the memory making part is important in the semifinals, and they stick with it. Now the championship game is a little different. That's much more of a business trip. The teams arrive on Friday, and they go to a really cool media day Saturday morning, and they work out. And we have a nice entertainment function for them Saturday night for the players only. But it's more of a business trip. And when I talk to the young people about it, they feel so fortunate to be able to go compete for the national championship and just go be with their teammates for another week and really. I think that, frankly, is the biggest part of it. It's for the players is getting to spend that time together with your teammates and your families. We pay the expenses for the family members to go with the players to the semifinals and to the championship game. And that's another memory-making part of everything that we're doing here at the college football playoff.
I'm glad championship week's different. You wouldn't want another bowl game week. So you guys done so well on that, and we learned something every time we talk to you. We've learned a number of things, but that is so cool that the families get a chance to go participate.
Absolutely. Bill, we appreciate your time always and look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Thank you, Danny. Thanks, Dan. Y'all take care.
All okay, right. Thank you, sir.
Bill Hancock, the chief executive officer.
Executive director.
Executive director. I want to give him another title.
Well, that's fine. You can give him he's the head guy, no doubt about it.
Grand Poobah of the College Football Playoff, joining us on College Football Game Day. Home stretch here on College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Danny Klinkscale and Stan Weber. Stan will have the call of the game on the K-State Network. And I kind of have fun with that sometimes if I'm out and about during a K-State game because I have satellite radio, and they usually, in some cases, use both broadcasts. A lot of times they only have one, but even if they do, I can switch between the AM band and the satellite, and a lot of times it's off by several seconds, so I can actually listen to one team describe the play and then flip over and say, well, what's their reaction to that same play? It's a lot of fun, actually, but I'll probably be
watching. Is there a big differential when you're listening to
sometimes,
me?
Sometimes they're... You mean time-wise? Or?
No, I'm just saying, like...
Oh, yeah,
There are different levels of homerism. You know, some you would just say, oh, they saw it completely different. I mean...
I think that the Kansas football broadcast still is a reflection of the fact that they haven't been very good for a long time, so you want to kind of make things a little more... You know, be a little nicer to your own team than you might ordinarily. I like those guys. They do a good job, but... If you're really struggling and oftentimes losing, then you're probably going to paint a little rosier picture than the game is actually going on. But anyway, that's something fun that you might try out if you have the same capabilities as I do. And, of course, on a regular basis, you can catch me not only occasionally here on Sports Radio 810, but all the time at DannyKlinkscale.com and the Reasonably Irreverent podcast. Dan and I do a podcast on Mondays, and it is our most popular podcast during the football season. So join us for that. Let's talk a little national college football today. Not a fantastic slate of games. It starts off early, as it often does, with a Big Ten game. Michigan, a team that maybe is the most high-profile, not-so-hot football team, goes against a very schizophrenic Maryland team. I don't know if they need to spend much time with that. Maryland was ranked.
Michigan finally got a win. That's the big news over Notre Dame because he had been on a streak of just not beating ranked teams. And finally, you know, he gets Notre Dame when they're highly ranked and really were the better team. They kind of dominated the day there. So at least Michigan can now just focus in on will they ever beat Ohio State under Jim Harbaugh because that's the big hurdle. But we can move on from there. There's not a lot of big games around the country, but there is one, Danny, in the SEC East.
Yes, there is. Boy. I wanted to mention one thing, though, quickly. You know, as you cursor down the games for today in chronological order, one thing that pops out is what is happening at the bottom of the top 25. We saw a game on Thursday night where Appalachian State was the ranked team in the game. We've seen, you know, Memphis today will be playing a game, you know, the game, and, you know, they will play a tight game against an undefeated team that's at the bottom. But the thing that caught my eyes is Wake Forest is ranked. I mean, that just doesn't happen. And I think what we see at the bottom with K-State, for instance, entering the polls, Missouri was in there for a little while, is that a lot of non-traditional teams are inserting themselves into the top 25 teams in the country, which I think reflects what we've talked about as a theme in college football this year, that there's really a lot more parity in college football across the board than there ever has been.
No doubt about it. And you think about, for instance, UCF was rolling along, and it seemed like they'd separated from the group, and then they lost a game earlier this year, and now they're just another team that could be churning near the bottom of the rankings. It's a heck of an accomplishment to be there, but that thing changes. Those last five teams keeps changing all the time, and Appalachian State, for instance, had done a good job, but then they go out in Georgia Southern for the second year in a row, beats them. So Thursday night, if you don't know, App State lost, so they're not undefeated anymore, and so they will not be in the top 25. But it is a parity even at that level. Just think about, okay, so Appalachian State is an undefeated-type team, so they're probably going to dominate their league. No, they still play some close games, and they did lose. And we saw in our Big 12, Baylor, I think they're ranked 12th in the country in one of the polls, barely beat West Virginia.
Yep, we talked about that a little bit earlier.
So, you know, how good is Baylor? We'll talk about that here in a little while. But they got the win. They're still undefeated. And I just think there's a ton of parity. The question is now, are there – 4, 5, 8 teams that are separate, just elite at the top of the country? Don't know the answer to that yet because, you know, Alabama, interestingly enough, has an injured quarterback. Tua's hurt. They haven't been flawless, and they just haven't played anybody this year.
Right.
It's just a weird year where Alabama has not been competed against. So how do you mention where they are? And Clemson is playing in an ACC where
You just mentioned Wake Forest is the second best team in that league. And we don't know how good a Wake Forest is. They've been solid, been fighting. But Clemson really is not looking at any competition, and I'm not sure how well they're playing. Who's going to write off Alabama and Clemson at this point in the year in November? Not me. But, Danny, they may not be great. So hopefully we'll see a competitive Final Four, and maybe even these two teams might not make it, but the path seems so easy with the schedules they have this year.
And inserting themselves more into the conversation today and getting the inside track in the SEC East is the mantra of the game between Georgia and Florida. Florida just is kind of a grinded-out football team. They've been that way for the last few years. And this year, Georgia has become that team. They've had all kinds of trouble scoring in the first half. This has all the earmarks of a very defensive-minded game in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Yeah, it reminds you, if you see some highlights of the old games there in Jacksonville, Florida, Danny, and it's just great tradition of the party, of the competitiveness. But I can just see in my mind's eye, you know, you go back to an 80s or 90s game, and it's 17-14, and it's just a war. And you got a Georgia team, I think they won a national championship in 1980, for instance. But just you watch the video, and Florida's right there with them. And there's so much at stake for these teams. To win the East is a big deal. You could possibly win the SEC championship. It's not a foregone conclusion that Alabama's going to wipe you out. We just mentioned that. So these teams don't look like they're great. Florida's using a backup quarterback. But who's going to write them off right now if they can win this game? The team that loses is really going to be disappointed. And these are the two teams that Missouri plays next. So how will that play out? We see a lot of teams go to sleep. Oklahoma, Texas, so much is put into the game. And then how do they respond afterwards? Georgia and Florida. If Georgia loses, that's Missouri's next opponent. Will they be beat up after a physical game and not focused on Missouri? Will that help going on the road? Possibly so. And then they got Florida at home. You'd got to say that Florida with a backup quarterback isn't as good a situation as Georgia is. But, Danny, I can't go there. I think their defense is really good. This quarterback does not think it's too big for him to go out and win games. He's got a mature mindset. So I think it's a very even game. Have a real hard time picking out who I think's the favorite.
Big game out west. A Washington team that probably has underachieved this year hosts Utah, trying to not do their conference any favors. Utah, the fifth-ranked team in the country, or ninth-ranked team in the country, they've got to keep on winning if they want to have any chance of being in the playoff. Washington gets a lot of talent, though. I mean, they have always been able to get a lot of players from Southern California. You know, it's a cosmopolitan campus to go to in Seattle. It's a big city environment. So they've got good players. They've got good coaching. But the solid nature, as we heard from Ted Robinson a little bit earlier, of Utah's program, you just kind of expect them to take care of business today.
Well, I don't know about that last part of the statement, but it is very relevant because will the Pac-12 eat their own? they're just so tight. This is, if you're the commissioner of the Pac-12, you are holding your breath. You're going, are you kidding me? Utah's legit. I think we can get them in a college football playoff. We need a team in the college football playoff. They've not been involved the last 2 years. The Pac-12 is being pushed to the side, and they're going on the road to the team that oftentimes and probably was the favorite going into the season, Washington. You know, really? Our team, Utah, is going to have to go on the road and play at Washington and play like the favorites. Utah's got a strong mindset. They have the capability of doing that. You said it well, Danny. They're not going to back down, but this is a game I love. Washington's at home and an underdog. How often do those athletes, there's some highly recruited dudes walking out on the field going, we're the underdogs? We're disrespected in front of our home crowd? This is going to be a really strong football game. And this is the theme of the day in the Pac-12. Right when they become more relevant, and I mentioned it earlier, when K-State beat Oklahoma, it was the Pac-12 who could do the backflips. And right away, week one, after that game, USC is going to be hosting Oregon.
Right, and both of the games, as we referenced earlier, both of the games, Oregon at USC and the game we just talked about, are on Fox. So they are games that everybody can see, and also they're early in the day. They're 3 o'clock and they're 7 o'clock. So these are games that everybody will see, and USC has played pretty good football. They're at home. Oregon's only a 4-point favorite. The other game is that Utah's only a 3-point favorite. These are two compelling games.
Yeah, very much so. And so, again, a lot of fun. I don't believe in USC nearly as much as I believe in Washington, okay? But it still could happen. I mean, it's a dangerous game for the Pac-12 teams like in Oregon, because the thing about USC, there is a mentality, a DNA, a belief that occurs in that city that they think they're great. I mean, they could look up the record and go, yeah, we're 5-3 or whatever. But when USC trots on the field, they usually have athletes and there's stars in the stands, and they kind of say, why aren't we going to win?
It's a helmet deal,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they act like they have Marcus Allen running in a backfield, or O.J. Simpson, or whoever you want to talk about, Anthony Davis. I mean, it's like, we're USC. Why wouldn't we win? And you got to say to them, why couldn't you win against Oregon? Oregon's got a quarterback that's, you know, considered one of the top 10 picks in the NFL draft, in the upcoming draft. They play a different style. They actually enjoy playing defense now. It's not your same old Oregon under Chip Kelly. We talked about that earlier. So we have great games. We have great games with the teams that are usually the powerhouse teams being at home and put in an underdog role. New guys needing to prove themselves. I can't really call Oregon new guys, but new coach version of Oregon. Rarely do we get a sit with a national scene that gives us this opportunity to say these are two of the biggest games in the country. You talked about they're going to be on the right venue. They're going to be at the right time. But also, the path has been opened wide because so many teams aren't playing. Only two games in the Big 12 today. Not a lot of big matchups around college football. So really the focus goes out to those two games in the West Coast other than the party in Jacksonville. And in the middle of the part of the country, K-State really probably has some cachet throughout all Big 12 country because there's not a lot of games.
And one other game we'll visit before we wrap things up here on College Football Game Day. Another reflection of the state of college football right now, the ABC primetime 6:30 game is SMU at Memphis. And both of these teams are ranked. SMU is undefeated. Memphis, which has long been more known for basketball than they have for football. Obviously, there's a lot of athletes in that area of the country, and it's always been, I think Memphis has fancied themselves a team that could do these type of things in both sports. But SMU, relevant for basically for the first time since the Pony Express, intriguing game.
Pony Express and the only death penalty ever. Can you believe the NCAA was thinking about really penalizing teams and basically kind of shutting down the program for a little while to say, we're going to really punch you in the mouth, but that didn't last. It happened one time. But this is the first time they bounce back. And they do it with a Texas transfer quarterback who did a great job. That win over TCU really vaulted SMU forward. They're coached well. Sonny Dykes does a nice job. They got a quarterback, Michelle, who's it's not too big for him. So SMU is the real deal, and they're going to be on the road. But Memphis played at a very high level. UCF has really overshadowed them. If you would have watched the last 5 years and see, you know, Virginia Tech's coach was there for a while, Memphis has been a high-level team. This is not new to the party type of football.
Right.
This is just a confirmation. In College Game Day, the television virgin, Kirk Herbstreit, and those guys are down on Beale Street in Memphis partying today while we speak, and it's a big deal there. What's good about it for these two lower-level teams, non-Power 5, is that they're both non-Power 5, okay? Because when you get a Power 5 against a non and you build a game up, how many times do we build it up early, not you and I,
right,
but the nation kind of gets into it, and then a Power 5 team punches them in the mouth and you leave and say, well, it was a nice story, it was a nice party in Memphis. But either team winning will vault themselves further into the national picture.
No question about that. Memphis is actually a fairly significant favorite in this game against the undefeated SMU team. 5.5 points there.
Liberty Bowl is sold out. That big old stadium.
Yeah. Liberty Bowl Memorial Stadium.
Rarely gets sold out.
Yeah.
One of the hardest stadiums to find in the world. I've not gone to a city and said, like if you said, hey, let's go out to Arrowhead,
right,
and you could hardly find it. I don't know how it happens, but in Memphis, the way the streets are and the way this is in kind of a park, It's the weirdest thing ever, but it was not easy to get to the game when K-State played a bowl game there. I was never sure myself, even when I was within two blocks. I wasn't sure. Like, okay, I can see the stadium, but there's no road over there. Like, park our car out here a mile away and walk across the park? It's an interesting place.
Well, it's an interesting day of college football. Stan is off to Lawrence, Kansas to do the broadcast of the KUK State game, Sunflower Showdown on a beautiful day. It's part of a big day of college football. We hope you set it up for you quite well. I think we did. Stan always does. I don't know. My part, we'll see how I did. But anyway.
20 years, we're still surviving, Kenny.
That's a good thing.
I appreciate all you do. You have some great questions.
Well, thank you, Stan. And join us, join the two of us on our podcast on Mondays at DannyClinkscale.com. And, of course, Kansas coverage, a day-long football right here on Sports Radio 810 is straight ahead. All kinds of pregame and postgame, and we'll see if the game lives up to the hype right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.